Thank you very much, Paul. It's good to see all of you here with us today. This morning I'd like to talk with you about a subject that I think is very important to all of us. I'm going to base this on Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, where our Lord says, "Fear not them which can kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both body and soul in hell." Who's he talking about there? There's only one being that he can be talking about. There's only one who has the ability to destroy both body and soul in hell. He's talking about fearing God. I'm going to place this on the board. Fearing God. What does it mean to fear God? The fundamental fact of our existence is our relationship to God as creature to creator. And the basic response that our Creator expects from us is fear. The basic response that our Creator expects from us is fear. That may not be the most important response. That may not be the final response. But I say the basic response that our Creator expects from us is fear. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, Proverbs 1:7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, Proverbs 9, verse 10. The reason I'm talking about this is that the biblical words for fear have two main connotations. This is true in the Old Testament and it's true in the New Testament. It's true of those Hebrew words and those Greek words. The biblical words for fear have two main connotations, and they have to do with two rather different of ideas. There is fear in the sense of being afraid of God. And I'm just going to put the word terror here. There is fear in that sense that's talked about in the Bible. This is a fear that comes upon man when he has sinned, because it indeed is a fearful, that is a terrifying thing, to fall into the hands of the living God. Hebrews 10:31. Given the fact of sin, the fear of terror is a legitimate fear. The other connotation of fear is the sense of reverence, respect, and awe. I'll just put the word respect up here. Both of these expressions may be meant when we find the word fear used in the sense of fearing God. Let me give you some examples of this. In Leviticus chapter 19, verse 3, children are commanded to fear their parents. Fear their parents. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 2, we at least may understand that passage as telling wives to fear their husbands. Now, in both the case of the children in Leviticus 19 and the wives in 1 Peter 3, we have the fear of respect rather than the fear of terror. God's not going to be telling children to be in terror of their parents or wives to be in terror of their husbands. At least this would not be the ideal in any sense. In the 11th chapter of the book of Isaiah, in verses 2 and 3, we have a prediction there that the Messiah would be filled with the spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord, and that he would delight in the fear of the Lord. I see no way that this can be construed as terror or dread there, where the Messiah is in terror of God or in dread of God. But yet Jesus did reverence his Father. He called him my Father. He called him my God in reverence. Circumstance may change our fear from one sense to the other sense of the expressions that we have on the board. Let me give you an imperfect illustration of what I'm talking about here. If I go into Walmart and I make a purchase, and on the way out the door after making my purchase at Walmart, I encounter a police officer. I'm not afraid of him, though I respect his office. I fear in that sense, in the sense of respect. I understand that he's a representative of the government. I understand that I have obligations here. I may greet him. I may hold the door open for him. But I'm not anxious to get away from him. I've got no reason to be. Now, let's change the scenario. If I go into Walmart and I rob the cashier, and then on the way out the door, I encounter that same police officer, I am going to be in abject terror. I want to get away from him right now. What's changed from the first scenario to the second? There's only one thing that's changed. The police officer hasn't changed. He may not even know what I've done yet in the second scenario. But in the second scenario, I have guilty knowledge of what I have done, and I know that that police officer is about to find out what I have done. That's why I'm in terror in the second illustration, and I'm only in respect in the first illustration. Peter, in talking about our relationships, says, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. 1 Peter 2:17. Paul, in talking about our relationship to the civil government, says, if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. We had that phrase in our English language not so very many years ago, be afraid, be very afraid. That's what Paul is saying. If thou do that which is evil, be afraid. This is Romans 13:4. He's talking about the civil government. Why be afraid? For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. He's talking about our relationship to the civil government there, and tells us that there are some circumstances in which we should be afraid of it. In relation to God, his fearsome and awesome infinity overwhelm us with a sense of awe at the very thought of him. We are overwhelmed when we think of God with our smallness and our weakness in the presence of the omnipotent and omnipresent being who created us. We recognize the infinite distance between God and us. Even angelic beings cover their faces in God's presence and cry, holy, 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 according to Isaiah chapter 6, verses 2 and 3. Jeremiah said, there is none like unto thee, O Lord, who would not fear thee, O King of the nations. Indeed, it is thy due. Jeremiah 10, verses 6 and 7. The fear of God is the most essential of human attitudes. Again, I say, it may not be the most important, but Jesus teaches us to love God, doesn't he? In Matthew 22, verse 37, he says that this is the first and the greatest commandment. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God. But the fear of God is foundational to that, remember. The beginning of knowledge and the beginning of wisdom. Putting this all together, I'm not convinced that we will ever love God as we should unless we first fear him as we should. And unless we continue to fear him as we should. The fear of God is the key to life. Proverbs 10:27. Proverbs 14:27. Proverbs 19:23. This has dealt with a great deal there. The fear of God is the key to peace and well-being. Ecclesiastes 8:12 says, it shall be well with them that fear the Lord. Proverbs 15:16 says, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil without it. Fear of God is the determinative attitude of the heart. Fear of God is the characteristic mark of God's people. They are God-fearing. Now, often today, when we hear the word God-fearing, it's used in a sort of a sarcastic sense, that these are God-fearing people, meaning that they're kind of superstitious and stupid. But there was a time not so very long ago, maybe in the middle of the last century, where it was looked upon as good to be God-fearing people. God-fearing means that you fear God. This is a biblical expression for people being as they should. It is said of Abraham and Job in the Old Testament. It's said of Cornelius in the New Testament, just to give a few examples of people who were God-fearing. Fearing. They are contrasted with the ungodly who are devoid of the fear of the Lord. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Romans 3, verse 18. Though reverential fear ought to be the natural response that we have to our Creator, reverential fear will not automatically occur without exception. That's the reason that you and I are commanded to fear God. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Philippians 2, verse 12. Now, that trembling in the New Testament does not always have to mean terror. And just to give you a few illustrations of that, I won't take the time to read these passages. But if you look in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 3, 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 15, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5, this shows that the word trembling can be used not in the sense of an abject terror. On the other hand, I will say this. I believe that an awe that's reverential enough to induce trembling seems beyond what is commonly meant by reverential awe. So let me ask you this question. Is it possible for a God-fearing person today to be filled only with reverential awe, with never any mixture of terror and dread of God? And my answer to that is probably not. Now, ideally, God does not want us to be terrified of Him. We have lots of admonitions to fear not. But we also have our continuing problem with sin. And the Lord's apostle has already told us, if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. And there he's only talking about our relationship to the civil government. How much more would that apply to the God who sees all and knows all that we do? No wonder Paul says, behold, therefore, the goodness and the severity of God. On them which fell, severity. But toward thee, he says, goodness if thou continue in his goodness. Otherwise, thou also shall be cut off. Romans 11:22. So there is this tension in humanity that's subject to sin. Let me give you an example. The Apostle John spent years with Jesus Christ. He walked with him, talked with him, ate with him, worked with him for about 3.5 years. Knew him well. In fact, not only was he an apostle of Jesus Christ, but he was in the inner circle of apostleship along with Peter and James. These were the ones that the Lord took sometimes when he didn't take all of the apostles. Up on the Mount of Transfiguration, for example, there was the Lord along with Peter, James, and John when they met with the worthies of the past. Of all of the apostles, John was the disciple whom Jesus loved. None of the other disciples were called that. Of course, he loved them all, but he had a special relationship with the Apostle John, probably closer to the Apostle John than with any other man on earth. But when the Apostle John turned around on the Isle of Patmos and saw the glorified Christ, John didn't say, "Hey, old buddy, how you been? Great to see you." What was the response of the Apostle John, who'd been so close to Jesus for 3.5 years? "When I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead." That was the response of the Lord's apostle, and it better be our response. Yes, the Lord touched him and said, "Fear not, here's what I want you to do for me." But that's the same Lord who said, "Sit in the back, and if they want to honor you, they'll invite you up to the front." Similarly, we ought to have an attitude of prostration before God that does not presume too much. We ought to be perpetually amazed that the mighty God of the universe has anything to do with us at all, because we certainly don't deserve it. If we want 2020 vision on the fear of God, then we need to look at Exodus 20:20, because that word, that verse, Exodus 20:20, contains the word fear twice in an interesting juxtaposition of ideas. I don't know how you have it translated in whatever translation you may have with you at this moment. But in the King James Version, it contains the word fear twice. And in the original language, it contains that same expression twice. Let me give some context for Exodus 20:20. The children of Israel had delighted in the mercy of God. They had come up singing out of the Red Sea. They had followed the pillar of fire by night and the pillar of cloud by day. But now they were being called to face God himself. Behind all the superficial aspects of their life, they were being called on to get down to the real heart of life. God has pronounced the Ten Commandments, and he has pronounced the Ten Commandments with lightning and thunder and trumpeting and smoking. And the people recoiled. They were afraid. And they moved away from the foot of the mountain. Chapter 19, verse 17 tells us this. To a place afar off. Chapter 20, verse 18 tells us this. They pled with Moses to serve as their mediator because they feared that God would kill them. Let not God speak unto us, lest we die, they said. So they hid behind a man to keep away from God. Moses said to the people, fear not, for God is come to prove you, that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not. That's Exodus 20:20. Fear not, because God is trying to get you to fear him. That's what Moses is saying here to these people. This is an attempt to remove one kind of fear and instill another kind. Do not fear with such a fear as brings consternation and produces nothing but terror. Fear with a fear which reverence and affection inspire, so that you sin not. God is testing his people here to reveal whether they will obey him. God is seeking here to produce people who fear God in such a way that they do not sin. The test revealed in their hearts a fear that drove them away from God. It should have produced a fear that drove them closer to God. An awful fear of God, that is A-W-E-F-U-L-L, an awful fear of God was what they needed, that they might be kept back from sin by the mighty power of God. This fear, yes, includes the idea of dread, because the fear of God includes the fear of judgment. But the right fear of God is more extensive than just mere dread. It has that awe, that reverence, that respect, that honor, that worship, which constrains adoration and love. The fear that the test at Sinai should have produced is the same kind of fear modeled by Isaiah in that sixth chapter. We talked about the angels there, the seraphim hiding their faces. What was Isaiah's response as a human being? He said, first of all, woe is me, for I am undone, in chapter 6, verse 5. But then he said, here am I, Lord, send me, in the 8th verse of that chapter. It's not a fear so as to draw back. It is a fear so as not to sin. That's what we're after. Don't let your religion satisfy itself with anything less than God, the one true and living God who really exists. Don't hide behind the superficialities. Insist on having your soul get at God. Insist on having yourself hear the voice of God. Samuel said, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. And we ought to say the same thing as he speaks to us through his word. At Sinai, we have man fearing his native element. Man was made to talk with God. Adam walked and talked with God in the garden. So here at Mount Sinai, it's like a fish saying, don't throw me in the water, I might drown. When water is the native element of a fish. The message here is don't avoid God, seek God. And you know, we see both of those in this passage. While the people drew back, Moses drew near to God. You might think that Moses did not fear God, but the New Testament in the book of Hebrews chapter 12 makes it quite clear that so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake. Yes, Moses was afraid. Yes, he had that terror, that dread. But the display which drove the people off attracted Moses. Moses even went into the thick darkness to be with God. Afraid of God's wrath, Moses drew near to God. Where God was, he would be. This points up the fact that we also see in the New Testament. The divine presence is both attractive and repellent. One man said to Jesus, "Lord, I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest." There were also people who said to Jesus, well, they were told that they besought him that he would depart out of their coast. He's the same Jesus in both cases. But God is love and God is power, and wherever God is, he exhibits both qualities. The divine presence at once attracts and repels, charms and frightens. The Israelites, when invited to draw near to God, declined the offer. Moses is given the same invitation. Moses has been a witness to the same sights and sounds, but he draws nearer to God. The same manifestations that repelled the people attracted Moses. The demons who have no love of God both fear and tremble, both believe and tremble. Men who believe in God and have greatly sinned perhaps cannot help seeing in God mainly a consuming fire, which indeed he is. Sinful Adam fled and hid after hearing God's voice in the garden. Adam used to walk with God and talk with God. After sin, he fled and hid. Psalm 119, verse 120 said, "My flesh trembles for fear of thee, and I am afraid of thy judgments." When the church beheld the judgment of God on Ananias and Sapphira in the fifth chapter of Acts, great fear came upon them all, we're told. When we consider the judgment of God on sin, it's impossible not to tremble in terror if we're looking at it realistically. There will not be an exception made for us where sin is concerned without the blood of Christ. We must not fear only with the fear that has torment when we're in Christ. The fear of the Lord is clean, Psalm 19. The mere terror of the Lord drove man from God rather than bringing man to God. These people at Mount Sinai who were so in terror of God, do you think that motivated them to obey God? It did not. These people at Mount Sinai who were so in terror of God were within 40 days dancing around their golden calf, worshiping other gods. But where love increases, fear changes its character. The dread diminishes and the awe increases. Love draws us toward God and rejoices that it may go boldly to the throne of grace. But even though we in Christ are completely forgiven and are not under condemnation, it is appropriate for terror to strike our hearts at the merest thought of apostasy, at the merest thought of falling or falling away. So Paul says, be not high-minded, don't be conceited, but fear. A reverence of God's majesty, a dread of his displeasure, and an obedient regard to his authority over us, this fear will make us circumspect in our Christian walk. The underlying warning of that whole book of Hebrews is, let us therefore fear. Chapter 4, verse 1. Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left of us entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. Any of you, you Christians, should seem to come short of it. Willful apostasy carries with it a certain fearful, terrifying expectation of judgment. Chapter 10, verse 27, verse 31. Yes, grateful love should now be our primary motive for serving God. But this does not altogether exclude the fear as an incentive for avoiding sin and doing good. One who stands in awe of God is going to stand in awe of the commandments of God. And if I can get my fear of God right, it'll go a long way toward my living a right life. Terror hates punishment. Terror hates punishment, but reverence hates the evil itself, which leads to the punishment. And I think this is a significant difference. Terror hates punishment, but reverence hates the evil itself, which leads to the punishment. Proverbs 8:13 says, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. By the fear of the Lord, one keeps away from evil." Proverbs 6, verse 16. So, fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole of man, as Solomon said. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. We should be perfecting holiness in the fear of God. 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1. We should be conducting ourselves in fear during our time on earth. 1 Peter 1, 17. You and I think of us as being like a lineman working very close to a wire. We're up on a high pole and we're working close to a wire, and we know that that wire is carrying enough electricity to kill us. We know that if we touch it, we will die. So we have to pay attention every moment. We have to live soberly, thinking clearly. And yet, if we're protected while we're working near that wire, a lineman is just not in abject terror every moment of his day. He's not shaking in terror all the time. He gets used to this situation. And he understands that if he's protected, if he's wearing the insulation that he should, if he's minding his P's and Q's, that he's going to be all right. Even so, we as Christians reverence God all the time. But there are times that we should shake in terror when we're considering doing wrong, or when we are doing wrong, or when we have done wrong. The fear of God in us is that which reflects our comprehension of who God is and what God is. And who God is and what God is will tolerate nothing less than total commitment to Him. The commandments of God are the concrete expressions to us of God's glory and God's will. If we are committed to Him in love, then we will love His commandments too. The fear of God and the love of God are but different aspects of our response to Him in the glory of His majesty and His holiness. The fear of God is an attitude that must find expression in open praise of God. So we acknowledge God's greatness, and we work to cause others to also acknowledge His greatness. If you're outside of Jesus Christ today and have never openly and publicly acknowledged the greatness of God, we invite you to come to Him in simple trusting faith that is obedient to Him. Be immersed in water for the remission of your sins, that you may rise to walk in newness of life. If we can assist you with that or anything else this morning, we leave this lesson with you, an invitation as we stand together. Come to the front if you would obey His will.